always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
Good morning to the people of St. Louis.
All right. Mm-hmm. Is he staying in the race or not?
That's the question, right?
Nobody seems to know, probably including Joe Biden himself, who may not know where he is at any given moment.
Yeah, I'm no fan of Time Magazine, but the cover for this week's magazine says panic.
Yeah.
That's it shows him walking off the cover of the magazine.
Come back, Joe.
No, over here, Joe. All right. By the way, our streaming video, we're up everywhere today. No issues. Rumble's up. Facebook's up. Twitter's up. YouTube's up. Do me a favor. You're watching us right now on whatever platform. Please share us. Mm-hmm. We had obviously some very big days recently. And so this is a great chance for you to help us get your voice out there even more. So, you know, click on the Rumble link and share it on your socials. Or if you're seeing it on Twitter, just hit the repost or share. And then in Facebook, please hit the share as well. Just get us in front of as many people as possible and hit that thumbs up or the heart thing and like the episode, please. Does make a difference here. All right, so it is 6:07. Got Gabe here, got Stell here. Where do Democrats go from here? So according to published reports, Joe Biden has made the decision to end his campaign for re-election. Also, according to published reports, Joe Biden has made the decision to continue his campaign for re-election. So thank you, media.
Yes, okay.
It was funny. I'm looking at all these, like, breaking news. This has been decided in these private meetings. Like, there's an awful lot of you reporting on the private meetings that you're not at.
Joe Biden is Schrodinger's candidate. he is both in the race and out of the race at the same time.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it's funny you put it that way, because that's really where it is right now. Mm-hmm. The whole time he's been in the race and out of the race at the same time.
Yes, exactly. And now we just have to observe reality at some point and then come to a conclusion. Now, I don't know when that's going to be, though, because I mean, the Democrats have a deadline, though, in the convention. So right, at the convention, one way or the other, somebody's got to step up. Somebody's got to be nominated. Somebody's name is going to appear on the ticket. So I guess that's the absolute last day we have to learn about that.
I mean, that's when they pick a nominee. I mean, I'm seeing some reports, like from conservative groups, saying, "Oh, the deadline's passed on all these different states." That's not true.
No,
the Democrats will formally nominate somebody at the convention, and then they will notify the states and do that. But if the Democrats, if Joe Biden is not going to continue his campaign, or his handlers are going to tell him that he's not going to run and then put him to bed or whatever you do. Mm-hmm. If that's going to be the case, then the Democrats need to get their other candidates out there.
Yes.
Or they can keep it a mystery up until the convention and then decide and have complete and utter chaos, which I'm totally okay with.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other aspect of it, I guess, which is why there are a lot of Democrats who aren't necessarily in the know, who are kind of, like Stell said, you know, cover the Washington Post. They're panicked because as time ticks down, the window of having a viable candidacy is closing. Now it's one thing to say, okay, now we have to change horses here in the middle of the stream. That's usually a bad thing. And now, though, you have to get somebody get somebody's name recognition up, because I don't think they have a national candidate with the same recognition level as Joe Biden, right?
No, so, they got a few.
Well, they've got Gavin Newsom. I'm not sure he rises to the same level.
That's not who I was thinking of.
Oh, well, okay, I guess they do have a couple, but you know what I'm saying, though. Mm-hmm. The getting a full candidacy, a full campaign in up to, you know, full tilt here is going to take some doing, and the less time that they give themselves for this, the worse off they're going to be at the polls, I think.
And not just in the presidential race.
That's true.
See, I think the panic isn't just about the presidential race. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, they're worried about Donald Trump winning the election. But I think what they're really worried about is having somebody at the top of the, because for good or for bad, and this is generally for the country, this is bad. There are a lot of people who show up in the presidential race who only show up for the presidential race and only show up because of the presidential race. Okay. And that's, by the way, means there's a whole lot of people who don't get informed on the things in their state and their local communities. And that's why I say that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're worried about are maybe a lot of those people not showing up and affecting the U.S. Senate races, the governor's races, the U.S. House of Representatives races, the state legislative races. This has an impact all the way up and down the line for them.
Everywhere down tickets.
Yeah.
From the top.
Yeah. So they are going to be looking for somebody who's going to get those people back out to the polls, because there's a lot of disillusionment. They're not panicked because they give a crap about Joe Biden as a human being. They are panicked because his presence is obviously bad for their entire extremist movement.
I heard an interesting point over the weekend. Some folks said, all right, if Biden stays in,
mm-hmm.
and God forbid he wins,
mm-hmm.
he could resign afterwards.
Yes.
After the election, and then bingo, you've got Kalamata Olive gal in the presidency. I like to call her that because somebody made a comment about Kalamata Olives over the weekend.
Oh,
would make a better presidential candidate. So I'm going to call it Kamala Mata Olives.
Okay.
And
that seems like a lot of work for 6:12 in the morning.
It really is. Yep.
But yeah, because if Joe Biden stays in the race, I don't see him kicking her off the ballot.
No, not at all.
At all.
Mm-mm.
Democrats would go nuts.
They would.
If that mm-hmm. happened.
Oh, okay, yeah. But that doesn't mean that she's the heir apparent, that if he were to not run for re-election, that she would automatically be the candidate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't. Now, I'm not saying she wouldn't be. I'm just saying I don't think it's automatic. I think the Democrats, you know, it's so funny because what this sounds starting to look like is that one season of The West Wing where they had the open convention.
Yeah.
And everybody, you know, lost their mind and they brokered the, you know, like an entire convention. They did a whole series on that. It was really well written. So where do they go from here?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. And we've been talking about this for ages now, because as you know, as we've recognized from basically day one when he was elected in 2020, like, this guy is on a serious decline. He's lost a step or two since his Senate days, and we don't think he's going to last through. And so who's going to step up? Who's going to take this spot? And we've been discussing this for years now. And every time I think about it, I do not see Kamala Harris in the discussion seriously.
No, I don't think most Democrats can't stand her.
No,
I mean, they're terrified.
She pulled under 1% during her presidential run. She was very unpopular. Among the communities she's supposed to get, you know, she's unpopular among black folks. She's unpopular mm-hmm. among women. So, you know, her electoral value was purely as a checkbox on the VP slot, but nothing else.
Yeah, because remember, Joe Biden made the campaign promise, if you nominate me, I will pick a black woman to run as my running mate.
Right.
And if you'll pick me, I'm going to select a black woman to be on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, fulfilled those promises.
Another scary thought. You're hearing Democrats say, okay, we could move her off the ticket. And if Sotomayor decides to leave, we can nominate her for the Supreme Court. That, again, would be terrifying to have her on the Supreme Court.
I haven't heard that, but that is freaking scary.
Oh, yeah, my
but,
gosh.
I mean, she's not going to be worse than Sotomayor. She's just younger, and she's going to be there longer.
Yeah, yeah. I guess
but
that's
boy,
that's
the I'll issue. Tell you, the opinions and dissents that she would write would be a hot mess. I mean, I'd be calling Susie Moore and saying, Susie, explain this to me. I don't understand what this means. And Susie, being a trained lawyer, would go, it's garbage.
Yes, basically.
It's infantile scribbling. Of course you don't understand it.
Well, it's hard to read crayon sometimes. I mean, yeah. It's like, you know, kind of chalky.
Oh,
weird.
My goodness. All right. We're going to get into this a lot more here ahead just a little bit. Man, I had a weird weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Because Friday I get a call from my wife, like right after the show, and I could hear something was wrong in her voice. We've got some very good friends, used to be our next door neighbors, and they live in New York City now. And they had dual medical emergencies.
Mm.
And so they've got a little 2-year-old girl. So Rachel was supposed to fly back on Friday. I was going to finally get her back after another week of her being gone. And she diverted and went to New York City. And then I headed out first thing Saturday morning to New York City. And I was there about 25 hours. Just, I mean, I'm glad we were there because, you know, we got a lot of stuff done for them and helped take care of their little girl and everything. And my wife's going to be there most of the week. But wow, I had just flown through New York. I hadn't spent a lot of time in New York City.
Been a little while since you.
Yeah, and so we were in Brooklyn, it was a whole different world.
It was an experience, huh?
It was an experience.
Too bad you didn't have Gabe as your tour guide.
And here's good old Willie over here on the corner.
So I'm driving. I'm in the Lyft, and I'm heading over to their house, and I kind of asked the Lyft driver. I'm like, I said, so is it required that every building have graffiti tags on it? And the guy's like, yeah, I think so. You know? And I noticed, I asked another guy, I'm like, so your hobby here is just honking at each other? And he goes, yeah. As soon as the light turns green, everybody just starts honking and going crazy at it. I was on the subway with a crazy guy who was screaming at everybody.
Yes.
I
sent and no one.
And no one at the same time. Yes. He was just screaming. I sent you a picture of that
guy. Yeah. And what, I wish I was able to respond to you at the time. I was busy. But you asked, like, okay, I guess this is kind of the New York experience, right? I was like, yes, you are now a New Yorker. That's it. If you are stuck in a train, in a subway car with a guy who's yelling to everyone and no one at the same time, that's it.
It was something about smoking weed and Jesus and the girls he used to take home and his dad didn't like them. And those are the few things I pulled out of there on it. And then my wife and I were coming out of the subway, and there was, on one step, there was a big red splotch. And I'm like, oh, look, blood. And my wife, the ever optimist, she goes, no, somebody just probably spilled ketchup from a New York hot dog. I'm like, I'm telling myself it's blood.
Yeah, there you go.
And then we asked, you know, Alex, our host, you know, she was there, and she goes, oh, it's probably blood, you know, coming off the C train, you know, in Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's probably. Now, did you have an authentic New York bagel?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I had a bagel sandwich for breakfast yesterday.
Okay. So I think you've completed all the steps of the initiation. You're now a New Yorker.
Yeah. The only thing I did not see were those world famous rats.
Oh, God, you didn't see one of the rats.
I did not.
All right, you are. That's right. You are missing one then.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rats, they're probably about the size of Rosie. So, you know, if you didn't see them, you didn't see them.
I didn't.
If you have seen them, you know you've seen them.
Yeah. I did not.
Usually kind of near a dumpster smoking weed or something.
I know it would be off your diet, but what about a piece of New York pizza.
Oh, yeah, that's
another
one.
There was a couple of pizzerias on there, but we did not. We had Indian food for dinner, but because I had something on the way. I did not have one. But, yeah, it's been probably 25 years since I've had a New York slice of pizza in New York. All right, just ahead here. Boy, the Palestinian flag people get crossed with the rainbow flag people, and now they're like, well, you were not supposed to be mad at you, but we're mad at you.
I love it.
Oh, goodness. Let's really revel in and enjoy. I mean, let's talk about the news story and conflict that happened in downtown St. Louis over the weekend.
Okay.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
All right, it's leftist versus leftist activism, and the rainbows are angry. I'm not one of them, but if I were, I'd be angry too.
Sure, they're messing up your stuff, right?
Yeah. Apparently, the parade itself drew about 30,000 people to watch along the parade route.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a big parade. That's big by any stretch.
They sound so oppressed.
Yeah, because they're so impressed with Taylor Swift. By the way, before Joe Biden leaves office, he seems hell-bent on getting as many people illegally into this country as possible. Question would be why? We're going to talk about that at 6:35 with our friends from FAIR. All right, so pro-Hamas jerks disrupt St. Louis' celebration of their gay pride event.
Mm-hmm.
And caused about about 20 to 30 minute delay. So the terrorism sympathizers run out there and they have these weird, like, I don't know, tube things, and they put chains on their arms to link each other in this tube thing. So they put a chain through a tube thing And so you couldn't separate them without cutting through everything.
Okay.
So they called the fire department out and do that. And the police department gave them three different dispersal warnings,
right,
which is three more than they're entitled to and two more than should have been necessary.
Yeah.
And so,
by the way, Channel 4 reports it was 90-minute delay.
Oh, 90-minute delay. Wow. I didn't realize. Okay, so the others were reporting to about half-hour delay. That's a long delay.
Sure is.
And, I mean, people were getting it. Now, at any sort of thing like this, like most parades, now this is the Gay Pride Parade, but you can talk about St. Patrick's Day Parade. You can talk about whatever. I'm just saying is that you give 90 minutes of nothing happening, people are going to get agitated and it's more time to drink.
Well, you know what? That's a good point.
Yeah. So what does a leftist do? I mean, this hits them right in the intersectionality. Because these are like allies with each other. The whole LGBT yada, yada, yada communities have been with the Free Palestine types.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the Free Palestine types have been with the LGBT stuff. By the way, go try that in Palestine. See how well that works out for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so these have been buddies.
Sort of.
And they weren't buddies on Sunday.
Yeah. It's funny because it really just kind of illustrates the idiocy of the was a Gays for Palestine type of
abuse.
You know, you'd see those occasionally at one or the other type of event, either a Pride event or the actual, you know, pro-Hamas events. And you say, that doesn't make sense. Just instinctively. You look at it, you say, that doesn't make sense. Well, guess what happens? The things that don't make sense, they usually come crashing down together. This is illustrative of the inherent problem with the strange bedfellows that are made in this sort of intersectional leftist thinking.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, and their only criteria to join the group basically is that you have to be an oppressed group. So basically,
and hate conservatives.
Well, yes, you have to be part of the group, and which is one of the reasons why you have straight white males desperate to become allies, essentially turned themselves into weird women. you know, and they're always wearing shirts like, this is what a feminist looks like, or you ever see those solidarity walks where they're walking around in high heels or something like that?
Oh, those are so stupid.
Those
are ridiculous.
That's what the heterosexual men in the leftist movement have to do in order to show themselves to be proper allies, because otherwise they would be seen as the oppressors.
Yeah.
So you see what I'm getting at, though? The whole thing is designed to link these disparate groups so that to create electoral progress, but they're really not designed to further one another's groups in reality. I mean, they'll show up to each other's events, like we saw, you know, the Gays for Palestine thing, but in reality, you can't have both.
I ticked off some leftists yesterday with one of my tweets. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw this or not. So the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, proving once again, it is not a news organization.
Mm-hmm.
They have a headline, anti-Boeing protesters disrupt gay pride parade.
So that's what they call the pro-Hamas people.
That's how they tried to spin it, anti-Boeing protesters.
Okay, I see what they're going with. All right. I guess, because Boeing
was the title sponsor.
One of the sponsors, the big sponsors of the pride parade. Yep.
And so it was anti-Boeing protesters. The headline did not address, well, why are they upset with Boeing?
Yeah.
What were they chanting? Were they chanting no Boeing? No, they were chanting free Palestine. They were chanting Palestine will be. No, they were anti-Israeli protesters.
Mm-hmm.
They were protesting against Israel. They were they would say pro-Palestine. The reality is that these are pro-Hamas.
Yes.
And these are pro-terrorism. These are anti-Semitic bigots. And they commandeered one of their allies' events, probably their allies' biggest event.
Mm-hmm. At least locally.
Locally. And this is one of the biggest gay pride events in the Midwest. I mean, I think Chicago's bigger, but for the most part, this is one of the biggest ones in the Midwest.
Probably per capita, absolutely.
Yeah, without a doubt. And so now they're creating animosity with one of their friends who otherwise are supportive of them. And you're just thinking, what is the strategy for that? I am glad they did, because I think it's hilarious. I'm glad that there actually appear to be some charges that are going to be filed. But still, I think the police were way too patient with them.
You know, if there actually are charges filed and if somebody actually goes to jail for that, I would be, first of all, I'd be shocked, but also I'd be mad because there are so many instances where these types of protesters are disrupting any other sort of event or causing damage or assaulting people or, we've seen them do it for all kinds of things, like in front of the freaking Holocaust Museum.
Yep.
We've seen these kind of things, and I very rarely hear about anybody suffering any consequences. If for some reason they actually suffer real consequences for disrupting a pride parade, I'm mad about it.
Yeah.
On one level, I'm like, okay, thank you for enforcing the freaking law and providing consequences for people being stupid. But also, where were you every other dang time?
Right. Well, is this what it takes to go, okay, now we got to get serious about this?
Yeah.
You know, they made the rainbow people mad. Mm-hmm. And that's who we're really afraid of or who we're really worried about
doing
this. But again, I just seeing the conflict and, some of the news coverage, the TV coverage of the parade goers with all their weird, get-ups and stuff yelling, what did we do? We want a parade. And so now all of a sudden, we could be seeing some kind of cracks in the armor of the intersectional left. I wouldn't count on that too much because come election time, they're going to rally around and they're still going to all vote for the same people.
Oh, yeah.
But I love watching them fight.
I do too.
In the middle. Let them go.
Yes.
Just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Let it go.
Better than the WWE.
Oh, yeah. And All right. So one of the things that they all probably agree on is they want more illegal immigrants, right?
That's true.
So I mentioned this over the past week. Joe Biden issued a new executive order, which basically provides a so-called path to citizenship for people, for hundreds of thousands, if not millions, in the United States who are here illegally already, basically saying, you've been here long enough, you got away with it, you're good, let's give you a path to citizenship. Why would they do that? Well, I think we can think of reasons, but our friends at the Foundation for American Immigration Reform, better known as FAIR, they're going to be talking to us about that here at 6:35.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Big week for news happened. Obviously, the debate happened on Thursday. And of course, the Surgeon General saying that we need gun control laws as a way of dealing with a public health crisis. But of course, we heard a lot about immigration, illegal immigration in the country. That was discussed at the debate, as you well know. And also over the past week or two, President Biden is taking executive actions saying that what's happening at the southern border, frankly, is the other party's fault. Among the other things he's announced is that if you're in the country illegally long enough and you marry a U.S. citizen, you're going to eventually get a path to citizenship. How about the DACA beneficiaries? The president announcing a plan to give them a pathway to legal status as well, something that's been debated for years. Why is this coming up now and in such a pro-immigrant way? Well, let's find out. I'm Mike Ferguson, now joined by Dan Stein from the Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR. And Dan, let's start there. Let's start with the president's executive orders saying this is how we're going to control the border, by basically providing incentives to people who are already here with citizenship or legal status, and then saying the Republicans' demands for a closed border aren't good enough. He issues an order claiming victory already. It's also confusing. But what is it that you make of the executive orders he's issued so far in the last couple of weeks?
This is actually a pretty simple situation. Congress sets up frameworks and rules establishing who can come into the country and under what conditions. And the president's job is to execute those laws consistent with the statutory scheme that Congress has set out. What's happened during both the Obama and Biden administration is essentially lawless. They have taken this very narrow power known as parole, which is designed for a handful of cases every year to allow an alien without a visa to come into the country for a very limited purpose, to attend a funeral or get urgent medical care, short period of time, and turned it into essentially a second immigration program. You know, Biden and his secretary Mayorkas of the Department of Homeland Security have essentially said we're going to control the border by letting illegal aliens just find other ways in. And And the term that Mayorkas uses is creating lawful pathways. Mayorkas worked in the Obama administration, too, and he figured out that courts would be reluctant to stop this process, that if the administration just started paroling in millions and millions of aliens, courts would be reluctant to say, you know, this is Congress's job to stop it, or the voters can stop it, but we're not going to tell the executive branch to enforce immigration law. So that's essentially blown out of control now. And Biden is taking this lawless power to the next step. He said, okay, well, if I get you parole, then under the law, if you're here more than a year, you can get work authorization and apply for a green card. So he's figured out that the DACA people who were here not under parole, but who were basically just here as people here illegally, but who had an assurance that the federal government was not going to take steps to remove them, are now going to be given this path to citizenship. And the problem is that if Biden's reelected, this illegal activity is not going to stop. It's going to continue. He's paroled in a couple of million aliens already in his first term. He's also allowed in people illegally. Through fraudulent asylum claims. Then you have people coming in without inspection while the Border Patrol is changing diapers. You've got cartels smuggling bad guys in, what are called getaways or entries without inspection, gotaways, that sort of thing. It's like millions and millions of people who come into the country illegally. And Biden undid everything Trump was doing to enable this crisis to happen. And then he turns around and says, well, only Congress can fix it. Well, he himself, Biden, undid everything that created the crisis. And then he turns around and said, okay, I'm going to take executive action to suspend certain asylum seekers if the numbers get too high. Not in our view, very effective approach. But then he turns around and says, well, I got to give a sop to the left-wing progressive base that just will say no for an answer, won't take no for an answer. And now we're going to come up with this sidebar program to let people who are here, in spite of what Congress has said, if you enter the country illegally, even if you marry a citizen, U.S. citizen, you have to go back home to apply for your visa before you can come back into the country. And Biden is saying, no, we're going to forget about that whole process or applying for a waiver to come back in. We're just going to let you stay. He just completely ignores Congress. And the worst part about all this is the Democrats are so wedded to maximum immigration of whatever means and by whatever means necessary. They don't care if they're marginalized in the process. They don't care. I mean, talk about a dictator. You know, Biden says, well, you know, Trump is going to be a dictator on day one and all this other nonsense. Well, Biden has become a dictator where he basically just says, I'm going to ignore the immigration law, let in millions of people, give them American jobs, give them all kinds of benefits. Places like New York, Chicago, Denver, completely overwhelmed financially, trying to accommodate people with, you know, illiterate in any language, fifth grade reading level, you know, basically coming into the country in a post-industrial information-based superpower economy. What are we supposed to do with these folks, okay? Kids are overcrowding the schools. Already the schools are not performing well. And then you got tech companies say, well, you know, American kids aren't getting any training, so we got to bring in foreign students and we got to hire foreign workers. And all the new jobs pretty much created under Biden have gone to immigrants, many of them illegally here. And somehow Biden is going to stand up and defend this track record to the American people.
And I mentioned, or you just mentioned, I wanted to note that every single person who's in the country illegally, in theory, could return back and then try to do it and apply for legal citizenship, but we know that's never going to happen. Last few minutes we've got, we're visiting with Dan Stein from FAIR. When you look at the policies, what do you think the motivation is politically? I mean, it used to be that everybody could agree illegal immigration is bad, and now we've got a Biden administration and the far left are saying, oh no, a certain number every day is fine. That's a whole world of difference from when I first started in this business about 30 years ago. What is the motivation for wanting or at least incentivizing more illegal immigration into the country and then rewarding it with paths to citizenship once they've been here long enough?
It's so important for folks to realize that the Democrat Party has changed throughout the 20th century from the New Deal forward. The Democratic Party was guided by a strong unionized base of manufacturing workers. But with the signing of these trade agreements and the Clinton administration and later, when the United States sent all its manufacturing overseas, you know, unionization collapsed. the Democrat Party needed a new constituency. And so they've developed this mosaic, if you will, of emerging minorities and victim groups, a very balkanized approach, but that's what they have. And they identified some years ago that they figured that immigrants, if they were poor in particular, would become dependent on the state and therefore reliable Democrat voters. And so they figured out that, you know, as boomers aged and became a little bit more politically wise, they would realize that their financial interests were not with just printing money and running massive national debts. So they decided they just wanted to maximize immigration. And so this whole situation where the Democrats no longer care about the labor market impact on American workers and the disappearing American middle class have embarked on this mass immigration program, thinking that they can equalize the agenda and basically consolidate one party political dominance for 50 years by bringing in all these foreign workers, immigrants, people who really don't have employable skills in most cases. Bring them into the cities, which, you know, Americans are fleeing these cities because of high taxes and everything else. Excuse me. And they're saying the only way we're going to be able to maintain any kind of population is to find suckers from overseas who are willing to come in and not realize what a financial disaster they're moving into, right? They think, oh, we're getting all these bennies and subsidies. But really what they're getting is a non-functioning economy and a community that's no longer safe. How long they're going to stay there. They're probably going to leave places like New York City when the gravy train runs out. And then they're going to move to other places, you know, where the jobs are, where the economy's better, probably red states. And that's what the Democrats are banking on, because they'll turn Texas purple, you know, Florida purple. There's a whole long range agenda here. They're thinking 50 years down the line.
All right. Dan Stein from the Federation for American Immigration Reform. You can find their work at fairus.org. Dan, really appreciate you being on the program.
Always a pleasure. Good to see you.
All right. Those are some big claims from Dan Stein there at the Federation for American Immigration Reform. And once again, I'll say that website again, even though I just said it, fairus.org. I wanted to talk to Dan after looking at their blog post from just a few days ago called Biden Announces Plan to Give DACA Beneficiaries a Pathway to Legal Status, and just kind of bringing everybody up to date on the overall Biden follow-up, which has basically been a follow-up to the Obama plan when it comes to making illegal immigrants legal, which you could actually go back to some roots in that in the Clinton administration as well. All right, what do you think? Let's talk. 314-912-1019. This is 1019 and 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Close my eyes. All right, well, that was awkward and a little bit funny. One ally protesting against another ally in St. Louis over the weekend. I've got a little bit of sound bites from the festivities. Another crucial Supreme Court ruling is expected to be handed down today, probably within maybe about 2.5 hours, that could partially define what the role of president is in this country. And maybe we were too quick to write off the Cardinals this season, Gabe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
It's entirely possible.
Wake up, America. It all worked out.
You know, I mean, they got all the news.
The morning news dump.
All right, one extreme leftist activist group messes up another extreme leftist group's day as pro-Hamas protesters disrupted St. Louis's annual Pride Parade on Sunday.
Oh, my gosh.
I just realized how long that sentence was that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to unpack in there. There's a lot going on.
Oh, my gosh.
About 24 terrorism sympathizers blocked the street and delayed the parade. Police Captain Christian Stamper was explaining to the media what happened just as things were trying to get back to normal.
We gave our dispersal orders, as most of you probably heard and did see, which we did 3 of. They still refused to move on, so we had to move in and make some arrests, and they did not make it easy.
All right, three dispersal orders. That's too many.
Yeah, yeah.
It's at least too many.
Yeah, you get one.
Yeah, if that. In addition to chanting pro-Palestinian slogans, those arrested...
Well, pro-Hamas slogans.
Yeah, pro-Hamas slogans. Yeah, those arrested say they were protesting Boeing's sponsorship of the event.
Okay. I mean, there are other people who would protest Boeing sponsorship of the event for completely different reasons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, precisely. All right. Speaking of Hamas and Palestine and Israel, Senator John Fetterman, you know, he gets some things right. He gets some things wrong. He gets more wrong than he gets right.
Yeah.
But when he gets something right, he's really bucking the Democratic Party. So I don't know what to I don't know what to think of this guy.
It's kind of fun to watch, though.
Oh, it is. Yeah. He made a visit to Israel this past week.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he actually met with Benjamin Netanyahu.
No way.
Oh, yeah. He was on Fox News Sunday to kind of recap his trip and say where he thinks U.S. policy should be when it comes to Israel and Hamas and Gaza and Palestine and everything.
I can't possibly support any kind of a deal unless for peace, as long as Hamas can't be in power on any of that. Hamas needs to be effectively neutralized before there's any kind of peace.
Yeah.
Yeah. There it is.
I mean,
he said the thing.
Yeah. And he's 100% right about that. I mean, that's one of the areas where if Democrats were more grounded in reality and morality, more of them would sound like him on this issue.
Yeah.
Now, he's wrong absolutely. About a bunch of other stuff. But
yeah.
Still.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of back in the day where, you know, when Democrats were anti-communist.
Right.
You know, yeah. It's kind of a nostalgic time where we could unite about something.
Yeah, precisely. Okay. The U.S. Supreme Court is going to issue a ruling today, probably within the next two and a half hours or so, on the Trump immunity case.
It's perhaps the most anticipated decision of the court term, whether former presidents are immune from prosecution for official acts they took in office. The High Court has previously ruled that former presidents can't be sued in civil cases for what they did in office, but it has never weighed in on criminal immunity. At stake is the criminal case against Donald Trump for his role in the January 6th U.S. Capitol riot. Greg Clugston, Washington.
Okay, first of all, this is a very big ruling. Now, I think the biggest ruling from this session is not going to be this one. It's the Chevron doctrine being struck down on Friday, which we're going to talk about here in just a little bit.
People don't realize how huge of a change
massive.
That's going
to
make.
We're going to talk to Stone Washington from CEI, I think it is. And this is massive. This is huge.
As a preview, there are a lot of leftists who are mad about it.
Oh, angry. They're angry.
Yes. Yeah.
But this is literally taking us steps back towards constitutionally mandated government, a constitutional republic. Now, in this case, right here, here's what's interesting is I don't think it matters whether this case goes for Donald Trump or against Donald Trump when it comes to the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Neither is a good look for him in particular. If he wins the case, then okay, what a lot of the public sees is, so does that mean you're allowed to commit crimes if you're president? And then if he loses the case, then obviously he loses the case. But here's the thing, right now, in this presidential race, nobody's paying attention to it.
Oh, gosh. No.
All eyes are on the cognitive decline of Joe Biden.
Yeah, which is clear and
so
obvious.
So this, I don't think, is going to make that big of a difference from a campaign perspective, but it sure will define, either reinforce or change, part of the role of president in the United States.
That's true.
Yeah. Yep. So it's going to be interesting stuff. Okay. Speaking of President Biden, obviously a lot of question as to whether he's going to continue to run for president. Let's see here. What was this on Fox Report with John Scott? Senator Mike Rounds, Republican out of South Dakota. He says, hey, if he runs, he's probably going to drag down the entire Democratic ticket.
If he's the guy at the top of the Democrat ticket, it's going to be really tough on a lot of those members of the Senate who either want to get reelected on the Democrat side or who are challenging to get elected into the Senate.
This whole Biden thing is so freaking complicated. Mm-hmm. So many layers to it.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is obvious.
Yes.
But it has been obvious to many of us for years. And now all of a sudden, hey, they made their bed. They got to lie in it.
Mm-hmm. And I don't quite feel sympathy for them, but I do a little bit in that there are so many Democrats who haven't been paying attention. They've simply been listening and reading the people who've been defending Joe Biden, and they had no idea.
Yeah.
They had no idea that Joe was actually performing this badly. They never watched the briefings. They didn't see all of the clips that we see all the time. They didn't see the compilations of him having these various senior moments in various places in public, and they were actually legitimately taken aback by what they saw in the debate when they finally tuned back in. And so on some level, I kind of feel bad for him.
Well, see, but the reason is the sources that they access, whether it's TV, radio, or print, didn't show us any of that stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the issue.
And Biden couldn't be protected at that debate for 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. Jill couldn't step in there.
Mm-hmm. The team couldn't drag him off early. No questions. Sir, this is a debate. This is literally why you're here.
Man.
Can we go to the bullpen?
No, sorry. There's no bullpen.
You can't go to the bullpen at all. Oh, geez. By the way, the Cardinals beat the Reds on Sunday, so they won yet another series. They're on a roll right now.
Final score was 2-0.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.